Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Psychology of Work. I'm super excited to be here. Today, I'm here with Tiag Loganathan, who's a president and CEO of Cardinality.ai, a GovTech 100 company using AI-driven case management solutions to improve outcomes for state and local agencies. With more than a decade of experience scaling SaaS platforms that serve vulnerable populations, Tiag focuses on building organizations where impact and innovation reinforce each other. He believes AI in the workplace can be a powerful equalizer, pushing teams to rely less on tenure and more on human behavior, like curiosity, transparency, and collaboration. He's passionate about developing leaders who can scale teams across time zones while staying grounded really in authenticity, humility, and a shared mission to improve lives at scale. So I've gotten to know Tiag over the past, past couple of months. And I feel like you just really lived that, Tiag, that sort of authenticity, humility, mission-driven vibe. It just sort of seems to be who you are. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Thank you, Bobbi. This is just appreciate the opportunity to share a story and why we got connected, right? As in, we have this common belief that people can be more than they are with the right structure, setup, guidance, coaching. I call it my life mission to enable opportunity, right? Opportunity acceleration is my coined phrase. But to answer your question, starts with our own personal story, right? Born in South India, Chennai, to a lower middle class, not poor family. You know, we are a family of five. We grew up in like 125 square foot quarters where we shared facilities between 10 families. But I lucked out with, let's call it the DNA lottery, right? One of the, I guess, a little more intelligence than average. Also lucked out by having amazing parents who prioritized our well-being over theirs, who made sure they gave us the best education possible, even beyond our means. Compromising lifestyle, they prioritized education. And also lucked out growing up in India during the IT wave. And all of this I'm sharing because that all creates the formula that both I live by and I believe it's possible for others as well. So what you're born with, how you're raised, the environment you grew up with, part two, and then part three is opportunities you get, right? So because I grew up during the IT wave, I graduated college and now I'm making three times what my dad was making. And then at that time, I also had the opportunity to come to the States in 98 and still very much the land of opportunities. Couple years in, I'm making 100K, bought a Mercedes, married my then girlfriend, now wife, living the life, achieved dreams. That's it. There's nothing more. Just hung around for a few years. Work was relatively easy and it was fun. And thankfully, my boss, I used to work for a bank, a Fifth Third Bank. We are now living in Cincinnati. He found potential in me and then took me along to his next gig where we were part of the consulting firm, Business Objects. And that's what opened the horizons for me. Then I realized I can actually do more, realize some of my strengths, understanding business problems. And because I'm a techie, you know, what will happen in a room with four or five people is happening in my head. So I'm arriving at possible solutions to really quickly just help me grow. So that's the fourth bit. I think it matters, the people we surround ourselves with. And then the fifth bit, just kind of fast forwarding from there to now, then it's grit. What I thought initially was innate, now I've realized it can be learned, it can be built, from the book Grit by Angela Duckworth. That's the fifth factor. Those five factors determine where people can go. And mm-hmm. that's my story and cardinality and my life mission is all based on that.
Mm-hmm. So what are the five factors, if you're going to name them out?
What you're born with.
Mm-hmm.
And then how you grew up with, mm-hmm. the environment you raised, and then the people you hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
And I've continuously improved it, modified it. Objectively speaking, sometimes I'm a techie, I speak like a robot. Objectively speaking.
You do not speak like a robot, for the record.
What I'm saying is you have to think like it at least, right? Yeah. Objectively, you have to drop some of your friends, reduce the frequency of some of your relatives, and then increase the frequency of who can add to your life. So that's the people. Very important. A lot of people don't understand that. And then the fourth one is the drive, effort. Typically, everyone just over-indexes on that. Just work hard. Work long. No, that's just one of five things. And the fifth and most important is opportunity. We have to get more opportunities, diverse opportunities. People who are swimming, they keep swimming. Maybe they should be climbing. Maybe they should be flying. Maybe they should be running. So you need the time to go try different things. Only then you realize, oh, what you're really naturally good at, right? So there are multiple different ways. In Japanese culture, they call it the ikigai, the intersection of all of this. My formula is these five factors.
Yeah, I love it. It's making me think. So, you know, I'm a health psychologist by training. And so like the way I see the world, and this is very health psyche, it's a biopsychosocial lens. So what's going on with your body from just health factors, right? What are you kind of born with? Just from everything, from states to like, do you have cancer? Do you not, like things like that, right? And then psychological is really your coping. How do you mindset? How do you think about the world? Things like that, so like psychological coping. Then the next one, social. So biopsychosocial. So like, what's your social circumstance? Do you have strong friendships? But also what's going on in the culture around you that's either supporting you or not? Thinking about things like racism, sexism, all of that. Like, how's that impacting how you are showing up in terms of your health and well-being and functioning? And one that's like sometimes talked about but less so is spirituality, biopsychosocial spirituality. So for some people, it's really important. That becomes a main driver of like coping. For other people, it sort of doesn't matter. And even if you take it off of like a religious kind of spiritual thing, it's really, I think of it as being committed to something bigger than yourself, like purpose more than anything. And it sounds like for you, you have two kind of added dimensions, which is really like opportunity, right? And then kind of match is the fifth one.
Grit, effort, drive, yeah.
Yeah, like your persistence, basically. To stick to your stick-to-it-ness. And then it seems like there's this thing around the match and like the opportunity that yeah. matters.
Yeah. And I believe, I mean, I hear you, right? And I think when it comes to people and performance, it needs to be looked at multiple lens.
Yeah.
There are other factors of when you're surviving, what's important to you is different.
Totally.
Than when you're thriving.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. One of the classes I teach is motivation, what drives human behavior in the workplace primarily. And you think of like motivation as the internal states that produce an outcome, right? So we see in each other like the outcomes, like what are we, the behaviors, but we don't really know what we're thinking and feeling that's actually driving those behaviors. And in performance management specifically, we pretty much just look at the outcome without recognizing the internal states, which is such a miss. You know, and I think just on the heels of what we were talking about before we started the podcast, I think that's where the unlock is. Like, how do you actually match, understand the people that you're, you know, leading and then match it with the business needs?
And that's what, if you think about it, social media companies and successful retailers, they've been able to unlock it, right?
Mm.
And so as part of my professional career, I've been on the other side, as in how can you unlock motivations, even influence motivations, mm-hmm. to get people to do things they don't want to do. I mean, you get people to buy stuff they shouldn't buy. Totally. You get people to pay more than they should pay by unlocking those motivations. Some are instantaneous purchases. It's relatively easy because you're just catching them in a moment. Some purchases or longer term. So you have to do like consistent and continuous influence to get certain purchases to happen. I mean, the luxury segment, it's ridiculous how much money some people pay for certain goods, right? Mm-hmm. And these are fairly objective and successful individuals, mm-hmm. but it's still motivation. So coming back to our topic, how do you bring that to workplace mm-hmm. performance? As in, how do you, and you have to understand an individual in a steady state. And then when certain things are happening in their life, there are different individuals. Mm-hmm. How do you do that personalized communication to extract the best performance from an individual? And then what is the collective team psychology mm-hmm. to get the best team performance? And it's not solved.
Yeah.
I'm excited about what you're doing and why we are having this conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I love this. And it's like, to your point, it's like the context matters, but humans are humans and we're driven by, they're just patterns, right? Like, you're an engineer, I'm a psychologist. There's kind of similar in different ways. It's pattern repetition and seeing the patterns, right? So what you're talking, have you read Cialdini's Principles of Persuasion? I think you'll like this book because you're basically talking about it right now, and we're reading in my motivation class. But it's really a marketing book, and it's focused on principles of persuasion. So how do you get people to buy stuff based on cognitive heuristics, which is like patterns of thinking? So because our brain's wired for efficiency, we make judgments in real, like without consciousness, about what we're going to do. And this is really why bias and stereotype and things happen, because our brain, people aren't trying to be bad people, generally speaking. We're just making quick judgments to reduce the cognitive load. But there's certain habits that happen that are called cognitive heuristics. And so once you can understand those, you can actually like market to people in a different way.
I've read something similar, and I love that book. It's actually relatively recent. It's called Alchemy by Rory Sutherland.
Ooh, okay.
It's a shorter, I think, sounds, it's a really fun book.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to read this. Alchemy? Okay.
Alchemy by Rory Sutherland.
Amazing. But so, yeah, in this class, like what you're talking about is that like there, you can apply these concepts, whether it's to a consumer or whether it's to your employees or to partners. It's really about understanding how to unlock people, right?
Yeah. I mean, in this case, we're influencing someone for their own good, right?
Exactly.
The goal is not to take advantage of people. I mean, our industries, like I mentioned, social media and retail and financial services, they've unlocked it, solved it for the business's good. Sometimes it comes at the expense of the consumer.
Exactly.
Right? But what we're looking to do is, how do we unlock it for the collective good? No one loses in this equation. A thriving employee is good for their career.
Exactly.
A thriving team is good for the team, and then it's good for the company, and it's good for the mission the company serves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're making me think, like, part of the class, after the students first read this, like the first night of reading this book, everyone comes in, they're like, oh my God, it's kind of like seeing the Matrix. You're like, wow, I didn't know this like sort of existed. And now I'm starting to learn sort of how the neuropsychology of influence and persuasion, but then it feels kind of creepy to people. And so we end up, the next class, we end up doing a whole thing on ethics, which is like, you have to ask yourself, for what purpose? And are you the only one winning here? Or is there like a reciprocity, like for what purpose? And is there a greater good and impact? So tell, I would love to learn more and like have the readers like, tell us more about cardinality in your work. And how do you even think about this? And
yeah, so I mean, I got into cardinality about 8+ years ago, found the inefficiencies in government. I mean, no one argues when we say right. our government services are inefficient and ineffective, right? Yeah. And I mean, initially, it was not necessarily for good. It's just a good opportunity to make money and build a business, and you know, create wealth for employees and investors and all that. But my dad passed about, was 6 years ago, and then the great individual, my first, I'm still probably the biggest hero. Aww. And he's a union guy. You know, he did not make money, but he helped possibly influence a lot of lives, his colleagues and, you know, coworkers and all that stuff and their families. And I've seen some of that growing up, when they'll come over and he'd be advising them, helping them and all that. But it was a good refresher at his funeral when we had like close to 100 of his coworkers, colleagues, they, some of them held my hand and they shared stories about how we actually helped them. And it also helped that moved on to a stage in life where it's not about, you know, survival and, you know, you need to make money and all that. Mm-hmm. There's some level of financial freedom. So now you're thinking the greater good. Now you're thinking, you know, how can we impact the world and, you know, many people and all of that. And improving government systems is one of the best ways there is if you don't have your own money, because you realize, I mean, U.S. government spending trillions of dollars for the good of people, of Americans. Mm-hmm. And it's not effective. So our mission is, how can we help the government agencies be effective in the services and assistance they provide to Americans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're making me think, it's like, as you're speaking, I'm just thinking of sort of Maslow's hierarchy of need. And you've sort of talked about, you know, through your own experience and your own story and even your dad's and the people like that, you know, kind of work with, it, sort of recognizing that people are at different places, like at different times in their life, and sort of appreciating that and understanding that, empathizing and seeing the person and meeting them where they are, not only benefits you and the company, it benefits the person, and there's sort of a win-win for the ecosystem. And it sounds like you're doing that pretty much at scale through the government and Cardinality.
Yes. I mean, so we are for a good. And I want to just quick acknowledgement of what you just said, right? Some people, like my dad, they always will put good from the beginning. He never just cared for making more money and himself, mm-hmm. right? Family and rest of the people. That's just how he is. But some people, like me, because I'm a mix of my mom and my dad, my mom is like such a capitalist, right? She wanted to do like, stuff.
Where's the money? Where's the money, honey? Come on. Yes, enough right. of your kindness.
But even throughout my own journey, I have traversed through that, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a phase when I was going after more things.
Yeah, no. And I think it's like, there's no right or wrong. I feel like when we go work with teams, and one of the earliest things we do is like pull values cards out to be like, what? Because a lot of people haven't even thought about their own values or how to articulate it. I think a lot of people internalize values that they think they should have, like I'm honest or I'm kind. But when you really ask, like, well, what have you done in the past day or 2 days that represents that? People are like, So it's like, and I'm like, there's no right or wrong here. I'm not trying to say we should or shouldn't. It's just better if we could acknowledge truly what our own value sets are, to look where there's intersection, anticipate where there's going to be friction, and then also map this against the needs of the company, right? There's company values, and we don't have to, we just have to know that all of these variables are sitting here and look at solutions to like lean into the alignment and then also solve for the friction.
You touched on something here. The thing is, and it's part of that book, Alchemy, that I mentioned, mm-hmm. and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole. We also don't want to be too honest to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We want to live our own reality, and we have to acknowledge it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So how do you balance that? But at least in workplace, some level of honesty, right? Some level of transparency, but this is the version that you need to be. I acknowledge that, let's say, you have a massive ego and then you're this person, sure. But when you're here, as long as you're able to temper it, you're able to acknowledge that we live in a collective and it's for the benefit of the team, and we're going to see moments of you being yourself. Okay, got it. Mm. But for the most part, you're a good team, collective person, then that's good enough, right? As long as that, so I always call it the value equation. As long as your value to the company is greater than the pain, the negatives that you create. Mm-hmm. But going back to the first comment you made, now in the world of AI at workflows, what it does is it gives leaders the opportunity to not have to deal with too many negative people because mm-hmm. of tenure and knowledge, mm-hmm. you know? Now you can be a little bit more independent and then focus on culture and building the team right.
Mm-hmm.
You need the frameworks that we're talking about, because at scale, those frameworks don't exist. How do I meet every individual where they are every day as a company?
Yeah.
Because not dependent on my managers to do this, everyone to learn and follow these principles. Not everyone's capable of doing it, right? So that's where equipping the managers, the team with the tools so that everyone can meet everyone where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How are you doing any of this now? Like, how do you even, because I know, so your company now, and you've like scaled multiple companies, right? This is like a thing, you've seen this over and over. What are some of the principles? Like you are, and I totally resonate this idea. This is pretty much what my whole field is founded on, that you can't see yourself, right? You have blinders on. And that, like, you need sort of that feedback because we only see our own realities. And one of my favorite quotes comes from health psychology too. It's really where you think you stand determines what you think you see. So you pretty much just draw a circle around like wherever you are. And that's the lens in which you see the world. So there's no real absolutes. It's just kind of like different ways of looking at things. So there are these like different lenses sitting on your teams all over the place that are hard for managers to know how to integrate because they're not trained in coaching or psychology or leadership often, you know, and how do you do that? So like, what are some of the practices that you've seen work as somebody who's led a number of teams and also happens to be good at this because you think about this stuff?
So I was and had implemented a model where at least the top 30, right? At least my level twos, Baron, you take the time, you understand there's individual personalized communication among us and transparency, alignment, and all of that. And the rest of them, policy, enforcement, instruction, because it just, I was wrong. At least I believe it's impossible to scale it. Mm-hmm. Okay. That level of engagement beyond a group of 30, because I've seen teams of different sizes. 30 to 50 is just amazing size. It's good to build a team of that size, you maximum productivity, and everyone loves working with each other. And then beyond it, it's impossible. But then I got referred to this book called Team of Teams.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I thought you were going to say Social Brain. I'll tell you about that after, because I think you'll like that book too.
You mentioned about Social Brain. But I've not read it yet, but at least Team of Teams I did, and it's got a framework as to how you can scale teams like that. And we're working on implementing it. It's not easy to, I guess, rebuild your car while you're driving it, right? So no one has the luxury. It's a lot easier when you do it from scratch, but at least we're not too big, so we're still retooling. How do we use a combination of AI and tools and objective facts, and then a combination of social psychology and team and communication and transparency and the softer and the harder sides, right? Mm-hmm. How do you bring those together? That's, we're in the process of implementing it. Maybe another year or so, the same question. I'll probably have more information to share.
Yeah, and you've talked about sort of AI is a great equalizer in a lot of ways, right? And like, what does that even mean, you know, as you're kind of like approaching all of this?
If you don't know about anything, you can know something about it in a second.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's the reality today. So I'm not saying knowledge and experience doesn't matter anymore, but I'm saying it matters less today.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what matters is the core capability and behavior, you know, attitude matters, positive attitude, kindness, mindset. Do you show up to work? Are you listening? Are you learning? Are you being respectful? Are you likable? All those things matter more today because knowledge and experience doesn't matter as much as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I can, instead of having a team of 10 where everyone's got knowledge and experience, I can have out of that, 3 people with knowledge and experience, the remaining 7, just the right people, right DNA. And then they can learn knowledge and experience with the help of AI, right? To bridge some of the gap And now it's just a better culture.
That's super interesting. So like, I want to make sure I'm hearing this right. But so say you have a team of 10 people and, you know, in the past you really had to balance knowledge and experience like more broadly.
No, all of them.
All of them
had to have some knowledge and experience to perform their jobs.
Yeah. And then they would fit together to make the team.
They wouldn't fit together. No, they wouldn't, right? Because I'm not prioritizing
a culture,
social psychology and culture, because I have to prioritize knowledge and experience.
Got it. So now you're saying it. So I'm picturing like your number one was like knowledge and experience. So you just had these different people mashed together in a group with a shared goal, but they were not actually connected super well. So it was like these individual contributors kind of on the team that rise in the organization. Now it sounds like AIs allows you to have like about three people or so, plus or minus, with a deep bench of knowledge and experience. But then you're realizing that the culture piece of that and really looking for approach, mindset, like the softer time of human skills, flexibility, willingness to learn, and then having the tools, like the AI tools on the side to kind of pull as levers, is tending to be more of the magic recipe.
We're applying it. I think we'll get there. Right now, we're probably from 10-0, we're probably at like 7-3-6-4, but I think we can get to a 3-7, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just focus on, and that basically means we're pulling people from other walks of life into IT, right?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. I don't need IT experience in everybody. I don't need IT knowledge in everybody in my team. Social workers, we're just going to train them a little bit, create IP awareness, and now you have tools and you have the rest of the team, you can perform the job.
Yeah, and figuring out what you're solving for. Like, I think for us, like Elisa and the group's front, it's like we were trying to figure out who the right people are to kind of do our work. And for us, we're solving connection and cohesion problems. Those are clinical people. They're not like executive coachy. It's like we need teams to work better together. We need them to understand the driving factors. Those are clinicians that just aren't. So how do you bring those people in to like optimize the team? There's a great metaphor, and I'm trying to think of it. I just met this guy yesterday. I was in New York. He's the CEO of a company called Fi. It's like a GPS dog collar thing. Very interesting. And he's been at Square. He's been at all these companies like you, has like built these different companies, and super generous with sharing about how he thinks about this. He was saying that like investors really want leaders to like basically build a brick wall and have these bricks that fit together perfectly and, you know, really focused on skills. And he's like, the much better metaphor is basically like you have cobblestone that you're trying to like build some kind of wall. And it's sort of like different depending on what part. And you're really looking at the intersection of how these pieces fit together rather than looking at these bricks that stack, which just don't work that way on teams. And I just thought it was like a very visual metaphor. It's like, oh yeah, I totally, totally get that.
Yeah. Typically you have a few rocks that are like foundational, and then you're like filling it with gaps, like stones that can fit in, and then gravel and all that stuff. Yeah. I totally buy into that. Yeah. That's how you can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know we're kind of, I can't believe we're almost like, I mean, we're at time pretty much, but what's like, if you had any words of wisdom, so people are building companies, trying to figure out how to do teams and leadership and all these things, like what are things that jump to mind or any words of wisdom that you want to share?
If someone's starting, or at least they have the opportunity to refit their team, they got to look at how much they can leverage AI.
Mm-hmm.
And the second bit is, everyone said from the beginning of time, culture beats strategy and all of that. It's an amazing opportunity to rethink and reprioritize, to go the basics, right? I mean, fundamentally, people work together when they like each other.
Yeah, they do. They get optimized because we're social beings.
So we have an opportunity that work can be a better social structure instead of it being a place where things are enforced and then you need everyone to show up at the office because there's no other way to create a culture that is productive.
Mm-hmm.
Because your corporates manage time and, you know, record your screen clicks and all that stuff because that's the only way we can track you.
Mm-hmm.
But you create a right team with the right culture where we're committed together and mission-oriented, it's possible again.
Mm-hmm.
It was harder maybe even impossible before. Mm-hmm. But I think with the AI that we can reprioritize.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Like using AI for really like the skills kind of piece of it, but then also AI can help here, right? So AI is really good at patterns and large data sets on things. I mean, this is what and how we're using it is really thinking about it in the assessment side of it, you know, through groups and then the nudging and then the feedback. But the work that really, you know, cohesion, or you still have to bring humans together. So you really, really, truly, I know everyone says it, but you really have to think about how you bring like sort of humans and AI together to optimize the connectedness of the teams, right? And AI is great for this in a lot of different ways, not doing the actual coaching per se, but nudging the behavior, providing feedback. You had said that it's really hard. It's really good at acting like a mirror for people to see themselves as leaders or as participants or members of a team, but then they need someone to help them do the work to actually get there because it's hard.
Both the mirror and an assistant.
Exactly. Like a personal coach. We joke it's like a psychologist in your pocket for everyone. Like, wouldn't the world be better if we had this for all like interactions? Grocery store, just being nicer to each other. Like, anyway, we could go down a whole nother rabbit hole. But Jack, I just appreciate you taking time with me. I always like enjoy our conversations and make me want to get to DC and come hang out. But I just appreciate you spending time with me today.
I love it. I love the opportunity. Favorite topic, Bobby. And hopefully we can help each other make progress with this opportunity.
Yeah, I think we can. Don't worry. I've got your number and I have like my mind already going in 100 different directions. All right. Thanks so much, Tiag.